is Chris Keys, Four Premier Guitar, hanging out at the Cannery Ballroom in Nashville, Tennessee with Jay Maskus. Jay, how you doing?
Pretty good. How's it going?
Good, man. Thank you for taking the time to talk to us. This is your second Reg Rundown, and there's so many iterations of these types of videos, so we appreciate you talking to us and hanging.
Cool. Yeah.
So, obviously, everyone knows you about Jazz Masters. We're flanked here by a couple. I believe this is your signature Squire model.
Right.
And talk to us about this one. Is there anything that you've done specifically different to this? Obviously, people can buy this.
I just got these Kinman Thickmaster pickups.
All right.
And they're noiseless, which is good because we're playing a lot of buzzy clubs, and it's started driving me crazy when the buzz is as loud as the guitar.
Yeah.
You're trying to do a solo, and it just sustains into a buzz. And
not a good buzz.
No, not a good buzz.
Yeah.
So I've been psyched to have that for buzzy situations and stuff.
Is that, what did those take place from the, I know at one point, if I remember correctly, is that you had Antiquities in there, the Seymour Duncans?
Right. Well, this is a new one I just had, so.
And anything else you've done? I know that you always take out the top circuitry button, right?
I just kind of taped it down so I don't mess with it. And I have this purple Mastery trim, which is cool.
And is there, I know people are really interested in how you have it set up. I know that you've talked to us in a magazine article that you really like to fight with a guitar. You don't like to play with an easy setup.
Right, yeah.
So it's pretty, like, I know that you probably don't know the actual measurements.
No.
But why? What's your philosophy behind playing such a high action guitar?
I just kind of have the bridge so I can adjust it on the fly. Like,
uh-huh.
If I'm playing and it feels, it's kind of about bending. If I just bend it and it slips, I just raise it higher, you know, just because I just want to be able to bend it easily. That's mm-hmm. like my main thing. And
yeah.
So I'll just crank it up until my finger doesn't slip anymore. So it then ends up quite high a lot of the time.
Yeah. You don't mind it?
No, I don't mind.
Yeah, that always. Man, for me, I'm a wuss. What kind? Speaking of strings, or in action, what strings are you using?
I've got Ernie Ball. They're like Cobalts on the wound string and RPS on the plain strings.
What gauge? 10s, 11, 1046?
1046, yeah.
What do you like about the Cobalt? I know that's, I think they came out those within the last year or two. That's a new string technology they have.
Yeah, I don't know. I like the way it feels and sounds. I'm not sure, it's kind of got a kind of springy sound feel or something.
Mm-hmm. Are you changing your strings quite often, or is it something you like to like have them broken in? And
no, I'd have to change them every day, or they'll break, because I don't know why, but
just the way
yeah.
it is.
Yeah.
And what's this beautiful one we're looking at over here?
I think that's 63. That's what the guy told me when I bought it. I never really looked it up, but yeah.
Take his word
assume,
for it.
Yeah.
Is there anything that you've done special to this one, or updated it with, or had to fix it?
I just put, you know, new tuning pegs, another string tree, Tone Pros bridge on it, and different pickup covers, different knobs.
Why do you prefer the, like the Tone Pro style bridge versus like a Mastery? I know a lot of people that get Jags or Jazz Masters and Jaguars, they
right.
kind of go to Masteries.
I guess when my first Jazz Master had like a Tune-O-Matic bridge on it, so that's what I got used to. I've never really played on the regular bridge, so the Mastery is just kind of an improvement on the regular bridge, and I'm used to the Tune-O-Matic, I guess.
Yeah. You don't want things to be too perfect. You don't want it to be too and since you're just used to what that was, and that's why.
Yeah, and it feels really solid, like, I don't know, yeah, it seems to have a little bit more sustain with the Tune-O-Matic.
People are aware and definitely associate you with the Jazz Masters.
Yeah.
But on recordings, and definitely in this most recent recording you guys put out last year, you use Tellys, Rickenbackers, Strats, and this is the first time that I've personally seen you guys break out some of those guitars on the road.
Right.
So want to show us what you got working with here in your boat?
Yeah, this is a 68 Telly. I just got Yeah, I'm using it on some songs, you know. There's definitely some songs that are mainly Telly that I record, and
like off the newest one, Give a Glimpse.
Yeah, and it's got a Seymour Duncan BG 1400, the Billy Gibbons pickup in it.
All right.
It gives it kind of a heavier sound for like heavier stuff.
Yeah. Where'd you find it at? That's a pretty sweet guitar.
Rivington Guitars, New York.
Cool. And I imagine all your guitars probably used, except the, I imagine the
Rickenbacker. This one has a mastery bridge on it.
All right, what else you got over here?
I got this thin line one. It's got the same pickup in it. It was a Squire, and I put a Fender neck on it that already had jumbo frets you can get.
Yeah, I know you're a big fan of jumbo frets. Do you normally switch a lot of those out on your guitars?
Yeah, I just switched them out on the Telly I just got. Yeah.
Something going back to like how you like to be able to bend and feel it? Is that why you like jumbo frets?
Yeah, it's easier to bend, I guess, and just feels better to me.
Mm-hmm. Is there any particular songs you use on this one? That like, if someone sees you bust this one out, they can expect a certain song?
Well, either of them would be for Going Down off the new album, and then I use it on Start Chopping because that was a big Telly song. Mm-hmm. And then I use it on another song from the new album.
I love Going Down. Specifically for me was like my jam last year riding my bike, because I actually saw Jay riding his bike today through town.
Yeah.
And I ride my bike quite a bit, and that was like my jam last year. I have a little speaker in my bike, was Going Down, that just a riff.
Oh, which, cool.
I want to know how that setup is, but we'll get to that.
Yeah.
So about the Strat here, what's the story behind the Strat?
Yeah, I just started playing this Strat tune off Lost All Day off the album. So I've only played it for like 3 or 4 shows, for the one song. And then been playing a Stooges song with John Brandon from Negative Approach singing, and I use a Strat for Stooges because that's what they use.
Yeah. What song do you cover for them? The Stooges song?
TBI.
All right.
Yeah. And this is like a Japanese one. It's got Seymour Duncan Antiquities in it, and then it's also got that same neck you can buy from Fender with the jumbo frets already. I just bought that. That's pretty cool.
How long have you had this Strat?
I don't know. 10 years.
Oh, all right.
But maybe the neck I got like 4 years ago or something.
Okay, cool.
But yeah, it sounds pretty cool. And
these last two ones are special ones, at least in the sense of kind of being unique.
Yeah, I used a 12-string Rick on the new album.
Was it on Love Is?
No.
I guessed. Castro. What song is that?
But I play it now on that song.
Oh, really? Why do you like
that? Because Lou liked the sound of it. I just played it once at Soundtrack. He's like, oh, can you play that on my song? So I play that on his song, and then the other song that I played it on the album. And then I started touring, and I had a hollow body. And I also had a Vox 12-string, and they both didn't really work too well. And I was in Athens, and a friend of mine is friends with a guy who has all REM's gear. He keeps it, and he let me borrow one of Peter Buck's guitars, which was exactly like this.
Oh,
and
wow.
It seemed to work. So I found one, I got to borrow it for 3 days, and then the next day after that I found one in Louisiana on Reverb and got the guy to come down, and this is the same guitar.
What year is this one?
I don't know. 90s.
Okay. I didn't know if it was a...
Yeah, and I guess Johnny Marr had traded it to Peter Buck. And
oh, wow.
The other one.
Damn.
But it seems to work with the stacks and stuff. It doesn't feed back.
And that has the higher output pickups, right? That one's...
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Normally the Ricky enthusiasts like the lower... They prefer the lower output pickups. What do you like about that one?
Well,
actually,
they don't feed back as much as the lower output ones I found. So that's what I liked about them. It worked better with my whole setup.
Cool. And what's this last one we're looking at over here?
Oh, this is like a Jerry Jones sitar, choral sitar copy, and I used a choral sitar on the Wagon originally, and on Going Down, it's on that song too, so.
Is that towards that outro, like the outro solo at the end?
So yeah, I've had a roadie Mark play it on stage for those songs.
How did you come across this guitar?
I ordered it, you know, from Jerry Jones. Yeah, because it was just like the choral ones I'd played before. You know, when Jerry Jones came out. Yeah, and I ordered a few things.
So people were asking when we told everyone we were going to go do this interview, and we're asking them, you know, what should we ask Jay and Lou about their setups? And one of the questions that came up that I thought was pretty valid was that you're obviously known for using Jazzmasters, but you have other guitars, like all guitar players do.
Yeah.
But you've recently started bringing those out. But why have you always chosen for the longest time to just kind of stick to the Jazzmasters for a live kind of setting, and then obviously using any guitar that you want for recording? Why not bring out a mix of guitars?
Just because a lot of times we're flying to gigs in Europe and stuff, and it's hard to just carry a lot of guitars. So we're driving this time, so I'm bringing more stuff.
Gotcha.
Yeah, I mean, in the 90s, I brought some Tellys too, but then I just kind of streamlined everything, kind of. Like my pedal setup used to be a lot bigger too and stuff.
And still pretty impressive.
But I can fit it on the plane a lot easier.
Yeah. Well, it's like the elephant in the room, but it's not that. It's like three huge stacks in the room. And so let's talk about these. I know that these haven't changed unless maybe you got different heads. But the last time we talked, you had the two Super Leads and the DR-103. Are these the same ones that you've been using for long?
Yeah.
For the longest time?
Yep. Yeah, I've been using these two since the early 90s. Yeah.
Oh, wow.
And then this one I got more recently. I started using a high watt also. Yeah.
And then just off the slide of the camera is the Fender. Is that like a monitor, or is that also being fed your signal?
Yeah, it's just another element, you know. It's just like each tone kind of mixes together into, you know, the Twins got the more high end for, you know, I think the Soundman likes it for leads and stuff.
But
I just like the blend of them all together. You know, it's just like there's Marshalls have more low end, and then the high watt is a little more high end, and the Fender has a lot more high end.
Yeah, okay.
So all together, it sounds cool to me.
So, just so we can be clear, everyone's obviously wants to know, is like, so all four on at the same time, all double cabs are on live. And do you have any sound you wear, like in your monitors or earplugs or anything?
I wear earplugs.
Yeah.
I've always worn earplugs.
It's probably a smart idea.
Yeah. Because I always like just the feeling of the sound, you know? So, I mean, Murph playing cymbals, you need earplugs anyway, so it's just like, we've always been too loud not to have earplugs.
You know? I remember reading you guys, like, that was kind of the mission statement of the band, was to be loud.
Yeah.
And so, it's true. I mean, I'm standing behind some stacks, or in front of some stacks, I should say.
And I'm also, that's how I sing is now with earplugs. I hear myself in my head with the earplugs in, you know, like, so I don't need monitors really. Mm-hmm. Like today we recorded at Jack White's studio and I didn't use any monitors. I just sang in the room with everybody I can hear it because I have earplugs in.
Hmm. And did you take because it's just down the street, did you take your full setup down there? Or
some stuff there. I brought one amp, but then they had a lot of amps too.
Yeah, I imagine.
And we were recording, it didn't have to be quite as loud, but it still was too loud. I was having a trouble getting my vocals above everything.
Well, I guess it's to the point now where we're gonna turn our attention to the pedal board. All right, we got Jay's tuning up for us. Jay, thank you very much for strapping on a Jazzmaster and walking us through your pedal board. In 2012, I can't really remember what's all different, so just talk to me about what you're using and kind of walk us through the signal chain here and give us some sound samples.
All right, well, this my clean sound is this real tube pedal here. And I've used that or the other bigger yellow one, that BK Butler one.
Oh, okay.
I've used that. I used to use that in the late 80s, and then I got all into all this rack stuff and had a way bigger setup, but now I'm back to it. So I still like that sound better than any of the rack stuff I have. So.
And when it comes to your clean channel, clean tone, I've always been curious, because your guys' dynamic shifts so fast, like in a song like Sludge Fest or any of the number of songs that you guys, are you rolling the volume down, or are you just, like you're kind of like almost volume set up by your different pedals?
Yeah, that's why I like this pedal. I have it so it actually turns down the signal, but it still has some kind of sound, you know?
Yeah.
Which is, that's, you know, one of my main concepts, because the Big Muff is going to be the loudest thing no matter what, so everything else has to come down from that and be quieter, so when I hit that, it'll get louder.
So people know what's happening.
So the overdrive to me is just to give it a little, you know, dirt, but at a lower volume. So a lot of overdrives don't really work for me, because they don't really create their own sound at such a low volume, but this one does, yeah.
When you're looking for different overdrives, whether it's the real tube or just any other overdrives, are you looking for something like a tube screamer that has like that mid punch in it, or are you looking for something that just kind of adds volume to your original signal?
I'm looking for something that is quieter, but still sounds a little bit overdriven. So that's kind of not something a lot of them excel at. They're trying to overdrive your loudest signal. I'm trying to make it quieter but still sound a little bit overdriven. To me, this is clean, but it's still a bit.
Yeah,
there's
still
be somebody else's overdriven sound.
Yeah. So that's kind of your basis.
Yeah, I mean, that's the one. And then I have this one, I have the Big Muff, but I also have a thing here, this knob here, which is a volume, so I can turn down the Big Muff.
Okay.
For a rhythm. And then this is like. That's the Big Muff all the way up for leads.
This last one is?
Yeah.
Okay.
It's set, for this setting it is, yeah. Yeah, so I have it, this one Big Muff at two different volumes, you know.
And would you say the Big Muff's probably the fuzz you use the most? I mean, obviously that's the one that people associate with the Dinosaur Jr. sound.
Yeah, I use that all the time. And the other fuzzes I just stack on top of it. So I'm using the Big Muff and the other ones on top of it usually, you know. And I have them always going before the Big Muff, other fuzzes.
Why do you do that?
Just the sound. Yeah. I have the tone bender. On top of the Big Muff.
Yeah. And you have it cranked. So there's no subtleties with the tone bender.
Yeah, I mean, it's going into the Big Muff, so it's not going to get louder per se.
Yeah. And I was asking you off camera if you still had the Built to Spill, or Jim from Built to Spill, he built you a tone bender clone.
Yeah.
And I couldn't remember if you still had it, and you said that's the same circuit. But
this is the first one he built me, the tone bender Mark I, and I've gotten really into that circuit now, so I use it all the time.
What do you like about that either complements or that is different than the Big Muff sound?
I mean, I don't know how to put it in words. It's definitely different, and it's gated, which is cool sometimes. I like the gated fuzzes sometimes, because I have so much noise going, it's good for something to,
yeah,
if I want to do something that's fuzzy but has silence in between, you know, I can use this on its own. The Big Muff will just make noise the whole time, so some songs I use that for, like, Watch the Corners. Well, now, you know, it's like... You know, so... I need the gates for the silence.
Why is there... Maybe you have something built into the Bradshaw, or the, there is the... Like, I don't see, like, an NS2 or, like, a noise suppressor. You don't have...
No, I don't have anything like that, yeah.
Which you would think you'd... Yeah, I would think with all the stuff that you have going on, but that's a testament to how good your the sound and the sound guy and everything, that you're not having to use a noise suppressor.
Yeah, if you keep playing, then there's no, you know. I learned that early on, too. I just had to keep playing all the time, because otherwise it's just squealing, so there's not much...
Yeah. And I alluded to it. I was curious what your setup or layout or what gets kicked on for going down the main riff that people like that you hear right out of the gate.
Oh, that's just the big muff with, you know, turn down the rhythm setting. Yeah.
And yeah. Where's the vibe get kicked on? Or like what songs are you kicking the vibe on for?
Vibe I'll use on like Gargoyle or like longer jamming songs. I'll usually put it on. Just, yeah, I always like the vibe. I can leave it on a long time. It doesn't really annoy me like a phaser would if I left it on a long time.
How do you have it set up? Like in terms of its sound?
It's pretty subtle, I guess. It's just... Yeah, it's pretty slow and subtle.
Yeah, definitely not annoying.
Right.
So you got the, is the pink one a phaser or is it a delay? I see you got
That's
two
a
delays.
Delay.
You got the Ibanez and the Moog.
Right.
Or Moog. How do you use those differently? Or why does one get turned on and another one at a different point?
Well, the Moog, I have this expression pedal.
All right.
So I've been using that a lot lately. Yeah, just, I've been using it for like long leads. You can do just a bunch of... Just to make more spaceship sounds.
Yeah. Trip the kids out.
Yeah. And the Ibanez is just set on a short delay. Like. But I use the Moog a lot more, I guess.
What's the pedal down in the far corner behind that little foot switch for the Ibanez?
This one?
Yeah.
Is a lo-fi loop junkie.
Oh, all right.
So yeah, I make some loops here and there. Just
That's from ZVEX, right?
Yeah.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
Added noise for, or if I break a string, I'll like, I can just like take the guitar off and try and just come back. And,
so people don't know. Yeah. Now it's like a secret. It's out there. Like when you see to go to that move, they'll be like, "Oh, Jay just broke a string."
Yeah.
They'll know it now.
Seems obvious if I take the guitar off and throw it down, pick up another one. Yeah.
What's
the show will still go on.
Yeah, you can walk away and get some coffee.
Yeah.
What's the next ZVEX pedal you got down there, next to it?
This is the double rock pedal. So it's two boxes of rock, and yeah, I just use that for other clean sounds. Or
can both channels get kicked on at the same time?
Yeah, for like get me, I'll use both. Like I'll use. I'll it'll give it a little boost or something. Yeah, it's cool, they can both go on.
I'm not real familiar with the ZVEX catalog, but is that something that they have, like I could go buy at a store, or is that something you requested from them to put in the box for you?
Both.
Oh, because yeah. I know that you have a signature pedal with them, or a pedal that you helped develop with them, is that it?
Yeah, like I asked them to make two boxes of rock in one pedal, but now they sell it also.
Do you get any kickback?
Yeah, I don't know. I should look into that.
Well, maybe you might start getting a check. Yeah. What about the custom audio pedal up here in the top corner? What's that used for?
Yeah, that's a tremolo. I just have it set up well. That's not very subtle.
It's not your dad's tremolo, that's for sure. Yeah. At least in terms of like how it's set up.
Right.
It's chop. And what's in the top corner there, the Boss?
That's a reverb.
How often are you, is that something you have on all the time just to kind of?
No. No, I don't use reverb that much. It's one of probably the least pedals, you know, just once in a while. I have it, you know, just, I don't know. Usually it gets lost in all the noise, so I don't use it that much.
And I think the only two pedals we didn't cover, well, one you can't really even kick on, but it has to be noted that this is the first time I've ever seen it on top of your lovely electric mistress, is a tuner without the stomp.
That's awesome. I was really psyched when I saw that in the store, because the other one, I'd have to step on the electric mistress to turn it on.
Yeah.
So I was worried I was going to squish it.
Man. Yeah, that's a cool little invention they came up with. But mind showing us what the electric mistress sounds like as it, in its current setup?
Yeah, okay. Yeah, that's one of the first effects I got, was the electric mistress and the deluxe Big Muff and a wah. Those were like my first three pedals, I guess.
It's a pretty good start, especially with the mistress and the fuzz.
Yeah, because awesome, I was learning how to play the guitar and the pedals at the same time. It was all one kind of thing.
Because
you
know. People might not know you started out as a drummer originally
and yeah, I just
shifted to guitar.
Yeah, I switched to guitar just to form Dinosaur, and because I didn't like any guitar players in my area, so I just figured I would just do it. And yeah, so I was learning to play the pedals and the guitar at the same time, and you know, writing whatever songs. You know, I couldn't do bar chords at the beginning because it hurt my hands, so
yeah.
I had a lot of open chords. I would just write what I could, and that would be a song. Yeah.
Would you say your guitar playing is influenced because you have a basis in drumming? I know sometimes drummers that play guitar or that also write with guitar, they think almost the guitar, the neck of the guitar, almost like a drum pattern.
Well, yeah, that's why I played so loud and had effects, was to try to get dynamics. Like, you know, drumming was a lot more satisfying to play because, you know, I just pat. It had so much power and dynamics, and I was just trying to get that out of the guitar, so that's how I came across using pedals to be loud and quiet and a lot of volume so I could achieve that. That was definitely from drumming, I think, trying to get the same experience somehow.
Do you still miss drumming? Is it something you do like actively when you're home?
Yeah, I'll play for a
few
minutes.
Does Murph ever come up and grab one of your jazz masters and you get behind the kit?
I think Murph's more of a bass guy. Yeah, he plays some Joy Division on the bass. That's all I've heard him do. But he did do a single where he played everything. That's kind of
cool. Well, Jay, I appreciate it, man. I thank you very much for taking the time to hang out with us and talk your gear. About your gear again.
Cool.
Thank you very much. We're going to talk to Lou now.
Cool.
We're on the other side of the stage now, everyone. We're over with Lou, the bassist. Lou, how are you doing?
I'm good.
If you've seen the band live or seen any of their videos, you probably recognize this bass with this gentleman. Would you care to talk to us about it?
This is a Gibson Grabber.
How did you score this beauty?
Well, the very first bass I had was a Grabber. And it was I recorded the first Dinosaur record on a Grabber and then half the second. So a lot of what people can think is a Rickenbacker on those records is actually the Grabber. But I sold my Grabber back in the day and I bought traded it for a Rickenbacker. And then, we did these shows where we played our full first record last year or a year before, December 2015. And we thought, you know, for authenticity's sake, I would get a Grabber to play the shows, and I borrowed one from this guy in East Hampton, Massachusetts, runs a shop there called the Luthiers Co-op, and he let me borrow this, and it just was so awesome that I traded him then this Fender bass that I had for this, so it was just a clean trade. Great.
Trading's rad.
Trading is really awesome.
So that's when you walk away from the deal thinking like, yeah, I got the better deal.
I got really excited. That rarely happens. I'm a terrible deal maker. I'm not much of a gear guy. So it was pretty lucky. And then, but I've been playing that.
Since you've gotten it from.
This, I've done all of this in the last year. If you could, this is all just really.
Because you used to play guitar in a hard, like.
Yeah, I started playing.
Hardcore band.
Yeah, really, I had real thrash.
So you have like that.
Yeah, I love strumming. I use my wrist a lot.
And it was funny, we were coming up here, Perry asked you, because one of our buddies has a Grabber, and we're like, he's like, oh, Freddie likes it because you can move the pickup. But you say it doesn't matter.
I mean, I don't know whether it's because it's just going through this array of whatever. If there's a difference, it's subtle.
Yeah, and so, your guys' sound isn't subtle.
No, we're not. No. We're not subtle.
But for bass strings, what do you use?
For a while I was like, I used to use really heavy strings, and that was kind of a thing that I did. And kind of like Jay, if you see the action on his guitars, they're really high. And I generally really liked heavy strings, and also really high action. But now I just do just generic or regular set, because I guess it's a little more boingy. And the way that this bass sounds just really, this bass just has a really good resonance to it, and it's kind of unusually, it seems like it's unusually good for a Grabber, so. So I just use a standard string. Yeah, I don't know.
And you said this is a 70?
It's gotta be something, I don't know.
Yeah, 70-something.
70-something.
And what about pick? Is there a specific pick that you use?
Hard, you know, just same ones Jay uses. Just hard, really hard pick.
So no give, you're just hammering.
No give, I mean when I was played in a hardcore band, I used to use those super thin nylon ones that just bend, but I guess now it's just like I want to hit it as much. I mean, I just want to have that dynamics between this. And I play with my fingers as well. I tuck the pick and play with my fingers for part of it. That's because this bass is really, it is dynamic, and it's made me stretch out a little more, and I can use my fingers more for certain notes or parts of songs and go back to the pick. So.
Well, let's talk about the stack behind us, as you said, the array.
Yeah.
So first of all, are all these on at the same time?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. So I guess first off, this is a, you know, Marshall guitar head. It's an 800. This particular model just sounds good with bass through it. The really classic sort of.
Like a Lemmy.
Yeah. I mean, Lemmy used, I mean, that was kind of totally Lemmy. I mean, yeah, early on. I mean, obviously seeing Lemmy play through Marshalls was cool.
Yeah.
And there was a band that played, it was from our area called Buffalo Tom, and pretty sure he played his bass through a Marshall guitar cabin. It sounded great. So when I finally came back to this band, like in 2005, I actually had the means to just build a rig that reflected all the bass sounds I liked.
Yeah. You know
what I mean? Like, and just because Jay, it's just so intense over there. And I've just wanted to get something where at least I can hear every sort of sound that I want to hear. So it's like this is the, you know, the Marshall driving Marshall high end stuff, this is like a this is, I love PV transistor bass.
Yeah, I know that you used heads. That early on in the band too, right?
No.
Not this one in particular, but like a PV.
No, I use PV in my other bands like Sebado and
okay.
a little PV, a PV combo or a PV like that, unless I had a matching cabinet, which I did not have back in the day, would not be enough for to
keep up.
Keep up with that. But this I got this recently and I run it through a 15 because I'm trying to recreate that PV through a 115 sound that I love, you know. Mm-hmm. So that's like that, but that's something that, like, you know, the early bands that I saw back in the 80s and new wave bands, hardcore bands, whatever, they all used one of these. This was a very common amp, and also they're almost totally indestructible. And this is like this is just a classic SVT. It's kind of a recent acquisition. I had never gotten a really good SVT, and I was kind of peer pressured into it by my bandmate and his gearhead friends. Because I'm really reticent about buying good gear. I don't know.
Yeah.
I just have something in me that this resistant punk rock, hard, this gene in me that does not allow me to fully just buy whatever I want.
It's like you're almost like going against your teenage self.
I like struggling, you know, and that's like the part of the sound of the band was really kind of forged out of struggling, you know, struggling to hear it, struggling to, like, you know, because it's just not so much, not even just because Jay's insanely loud, it's just that, you know, when you play shows and it's like you're always struggling, and I kind of relate the sound of the band and the way that the style that Murph and I developed from this kind of struggle to, like, the force of the and using what you had, basically.
Yeah.
So I never got one, but this is like just a you know, totally classic big round tubey SVT sound, but I run it through this pedal, the bass BB preamp, and that's, so it's going in distorted. It also goes distorted into the DI, because I hate direct DI almost more than, I hate it like a little kid hates Brussels sprouts. So it's running through this pedal, into the direct, out of the direct, into this, and it just has this wonderful, and that's a really good, it's rare to find a good bass overdrive, but that's the good one. And it's through this, it just sounds big. So I have these like mid-range, high, and then just the real basic beef of it. And between all of these, I can hear myself.
You know, can you keep up with Jay?
I don't know if I can keep up with Jay. Yeah. I'm in my own world. I mean, he's in his world.
It's like, and you guys have your own three one-man bands.
Yeah, I mean, but I'm in a really cool spot because I have Jay's vocals here, and his guitar is just always through his vocals. So I get his guitar.
Uh-huh.
Murph plays, that monitor is just loud, loud, loud all the time. And I've acclimated to it, and I really like it now. So I get this bolt of drums, like physical drums, Jay's vocals and guitar, and then right here, so I actually hear the whole band when I play, which is probably I don't think either
feel the whole band too.
Yeah, I don't think either of these guys hear quite as much as I do when I play, and I really enjoy it. So I get really into it.
You get the best seat in the house.
I do, and I love it. I don't know if I can be heard honestly out there, and I guess I care less and less about that.
I was telling you guys off stage before the or I hadn't told you. I saw you guys last summer at the Codfish Hollow Barn in Maquoketa, Iowa.
Oh, yeah.
The barn. And I was like, man, I could hear you. And second of all, I'm surprised they still have a roof.
Yeah,
because your guys' volume could have just blown that thing to smithereens. Oh, right. But the barn was a really cool show.
Yeah,
but yes, you can be heard.
Yeah.
At least in that barn show.
Yeah, yeah, I know.
I heard you. I felt you.
I think in general and Noel, our sound guy, really, he was a huge music fan in the 60s. So he saw most of the real classic bands you can imagine. And he has this really cool kind of older sensibility to it, where the PA is something that functions to get the vocals out. That's its primary function of it, is to get the vocals over the top of the band and using as much of the amp sounds as possible and I think he's gotten really good at that.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, I think he does know that, you know, for him and, I mean, for some people into the band, it is really about our, you know, sort of idiosyncratic ways of playing and the way that we work together. Mm-hmm. That is it. So it's good to hear everything. I love to hear everything when I see a band. So.
Yeah.
So Noel is really good at that. And he's, I mean, and Jay also has been modulating over the years and adapting. And like when I first came back to the band, it was just like, oh my God, it was this unyielding wall of sound. And it didn't, when I started, like he actually had his combo that's pointed his head over there, like on this side of the stage. And I was like, what?
This ain't happening.
Because I mean, just what's coming out the back of that amp, I mean, it was just, so I sort of protested and he, you know.
He relented.
And he put it over there and it's made, ever since that, since he was willing to do that, I'm like, okay, we can do this. This will work. But when I came, when at first shows we did, it was just like right here and I'm like, no. But that's good.
Jay had talked about earlier when your love is, and that you wanted him to play that Rickenbacker.
Yeah.
Why was that?
Well,
to hear from you.
Well, it was a song that he played on his 12 that he was going to play live.
Uh-huh.
And we played it, and I'm like, it sounded great. Like, for him to introduce a 12-string electric into the set is pretty momentous,
yeah.
Really.
Yeah.
It's kind of like a real, for me, it's like a real step towards like fulfilling our, you know, our potential as a band. And he had written this song on the record using a 12, and my song on the record is primarily acoustic guitar.
Mm-hmm.
You know, strummed like with chords that were meant to almost make it sound more like a 12 string. But we were just rehearsing that once, I'm like, hey Jay, can you play? Because he was sort of fiddling around like, oh, just play Love Is on that. It's going to sound awesome. And it did. I was like, oh, I'm so excited. That's been like one of the, that event in itself and just this whole, it makes it really special for me by him playing that, because I love 60s music so much. I love everything. Mm-hmm. That's like, I mean, I love, you know, the electric 12 string. Makes me, you know, in a really bombastic, I mean, if it's
yeah.
good and loud and like really, it's so, and it's underutilized and not many people do it on that kind of turbo level. And when he does it, I'm just like, ah.
And it's your song,
it on my
too,
song,
so
it's,
cool,
it's just
yeah.
like, I'm like, oh, that's, you know, I get really, really into it, so it's cool.
Well, Lou, we appreciate it. I think we covered everything. It's
cool.
Just a lot of volume and a lot of aggression that
yeah, well,
comes
no,
out.
There's a lot of subtlety here. This is, you know, we have, there is
your bass is
somewhere,
a different.
There's, you know, I mean, we probably play harder than your average heavy metal band.
Yeah.
Just in terms of, but our song, but I, you know, the songs obviously are subtle.
But that's what makes you guys fun and unique.
That's
appreciate it.
Yeah.
We thank you for creating music. Thank you for hanging out with us for another Rig Rundown.
Yeah.
This is Chris Keys, Broken Rear Guitar.
Don't forget to sign up for PG Perks, your all-access pass to exclusive gear giveaways and discounts on PremierGuitar.com.